Hi folks, this is Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of today's Survival Show. Episode number 148, to be exact, and this is a practical show. I don't go tinfoil hat on you. I just keep things rooted in common sense. That's the way I prefer to do it. So I thought I'd put out another episode here on survival cooking. Back on July 15th, I posted episode number 146 on cooking for survival. And I received a comment recently on iTunes. Somebody thought that I didn't really get too detailed into the subject, that I spent a lot of time on building fires and things like that. And that's probably true. And so after thinking about that, I thought, okay, time to get a little bit more detailed and get into some more information on cooking in a survival or an emergency situation. So that's going to be the topic of this show, kind of a part two, kind of a follow-up to episode 146. Before I get into that, let me just take care of a couple of brief things that I want to say, a couple of announcements. The website is todayssurvival.com. Again, that's todayssurvival.com, two S's in that web address. Also, please become a member of our forum. It's an excellent group of people, been growing a lot lately, and I've been adding a lot of new members lately and so forth, and people getting involved. I'd like to hear what you have to say. All the other listeners who are involved in the forum would also like to converse with you. Good bunch of friendly people. Also, don't forget to join the Survival Champions Club. I have a couple of customized podcasts that contain information that I've never covered on today's survival show before. It just helps keep this show running, helps offset some of the financial costs in putting this out. This show will always be free, but every once in a while there's a few costs that creep up in hosting fees and things, so that would be great to get your support on that. If I've helped you in any way and you feel it within your heart to do that, that would be great. Go to the main website, todayssurvival.com, and there's a couple of tabs there, a couple of buttons that say buy now, or you can also click the Survival Champions podcast link up at the top of the web page. All right, that's it. I don't like this show to be very commercial. I just like to keep it full of information that you can enjoy and benefit from in your preparedness lifestyle. Now, there's so much talk about food, and especially cooking food. I think food is one of the aspects of survival that a lot of people needlessly worry about. And I found a couple of good articles. I actually intended to get into these into episode 146, but you know, I was driving, and right now I'm not driving, and I kind of got a little off topic and so forth. So let's go ahead and talk about this stuff. You know, we store food at home or in our bug out location for the specific purpose that in case something goes wrong and we have to dip into those food supplies, that it's ready for us. However, what I was trying to mention in episode 146 is sometimes we don't have at our disposal efficient ways of cooking that food and starting fires and so forth. So that's what I wanted to talk about back in that episode. Now let's get into some more specifics. There seems to be a lot of anxiety, really, over having enough food and eating on a regular basis. And that's with good reason, in my opinion. You know, you have to eat every day. You might be able to go several days, maybe a week or so, without food, much shorter without water. But let's face it, I mean, so many people talk about guns, but you don't have to shoot people very often. So many people talk about power going out and so forth, so we have backup generators for that. But one of the things that we really cannot live without is obviously food and water. So I think those two should be at the very, very, very top of your survival preparation list. Now, we can trap small game. We can hunt birds. We can hunt birds. You know, we can gather plants, catch fish, shellfish, stuff like that. But do you know how to cook it? And do you know how to preserve it? That's the key. And a lot of times people think, and I used to think this way, that just roasting a piece of meat or fish is all you need to do. Or grill it, for example. But I don't know if you know this or not, but you'll actually get probably more nutrients and vitamins and more benefit from the food if you boil it. And, I used to think, I was always told, don't boil it. Okay? Kind of rethink that. It might be not what you think. And this is especially true if you don't have the means to roast it or grill it. A lot of times in a preparedness situation, in a survival situation, if we're in the wilderness or if we happen to be at home with no power, no way to turn on the stove, turn on the oven, maybe you don't have any other ways to cook the food, maybe boiling is your only option. And if you think about boiling meat or fish or something like that, if you don't overboil it, chances are you're going to continue to retain most of the nutrients and most of the vitamins that are in that piece of meat. You can use pretty much any empty tin or container to boil your food. Now, if it's meat like rabbits, squirrels, possums, rodents, you know, animals like that that you have to catch to sustain yourself or to kill to sustain yourself, those really should be boiled. They could be roasted, but really those kinds of animals should be boiled. Make sure that the liver of that dead animal does not have any spots or lumps, and make sure that it's firm to the touch. And there's a good article that's been written on this, and I'm going to summarize this a little bit and throw some of my own flavor into it. But if you go to simplesurvival.net, simplesurvival.net, I'll put a link to it as well in the show notes. But when it comes to animals like that, you should keep the head and the liver and the kidneys of healthy animals. Boil the head for about 100 minutes, and after it's cool to the touch, remove the eyes and all the flesh. You can even collect the blood from any animal you kill and allow it to set covered in a cool spot until a clear liquid comes to the top. Then just pour the liquid off and allow the blood below to firm up. Once that blood is caked, it can be cut into squares and added to soups or stews, and you can even add a few plants, and guess what? You might have a pretty decent meal there. But a lot of people like to eat the organs of the animals also if they're cooked right. So, you know, if you're in a situation where you've got to harvest an animal, don't just be harvesting the animal just for the meat, but also don't forget about the organs inside of that animal as well. A lot of them are edible. I would strongly suggest you do some research on that, though, because there's some that you may want to stay away from. But obviously, livers and kidneys of healthy animals, and that's the point there, that's the key. Healthy animals should be kept. Now, when cooking meat and cooking animals, you know, this is something that I was taught when I was young, and it's a mistake. I used to do it, and it's not the right thing to do. Never cook directly over the flames of your fire. Don't, you know, put your meat on a stick or something like that and just cook it right over the flames. The problem, what occurs when you do that, is the meat is going to burn on the outside, and it's going to be raw on the inside. Then you're going to have a problem, then you're not going to have fully cooked meat. Always try to find something to, you know, to cook it in a pot, boil it in a pot or something like that. Or if you insist on grilling it or roasting it, keep it way above the fire, keep it away from the flames, and have something to cook it on. Now, I'm going to get back to the meat cooking and the survival cooking of animals and things a little bit later here in the show. But let's talk about kids for a minute. I have a son, as most of you know. I have a seventh grade son, and a lot of us who listen to this show, we have kids. If your family includes kids, keep in mind that under stressful conditions, your kids' behavior can regress. And so they might want food that's familiar and comforting to them. In a stressful survival preparedness situation, you're probably not going to get children to eat a lot of green vegetables and things like green beans and stuff like that. You know, I know we like to keep our kids healthy and we like to feed our kids healthy things, but keep things like cheese and crackers and prepackaged snacks handy. Keep them handy in your survival, your preparedness supplies. you know, soda crackers and things, squeezy cheese style products, stuff like that. Stuff that's fun for kids to eat. It's more comforting to them. Macaroni and cheese might also be something you might want to consider. And it's easy to cook, isn't it? It's very easy to prepare. You know, it's light. It doesn't take up a whole lot of room in your kit, in your survival kit. And, you know, it's an easy thing to prepare, and it's comforting. It's a pleasant food for kids. Now, we've all heard of MREs, meals ready to eat. I don't particularly care for them too much, but a lot of people do. So, you know, MREs are usually pretty easy to cook, and they're readily available. So I would suggest that you stock up if that's your thing. It's really not my thing, but, you know, I always keep a few handy just in case. You know, I mean, the plus is that they are ready to eat. They don't require extra water, and some of them even come with self-heating units that create heat when you wet them. The downside of MREs is that they do have to be heated in some fashion. And, you know, you've got to have a heat source of some kind. And, of course, the taste. Now, supposedly the newer MREs taste better than some of the old ones, to each their own. But, you know, in your survival cooking supplies, I guess you can't count out the importance of MREs. Now, since I'm on the subject of kids here, I think you may have a little bit difficult time unless, you know, kids have tried MREs before. You may have a hard time getting them to eat from MREs. I don't know. Your mileage may vary. Now, I know I'm talking about survival cooking. I want to talk a little bit here about some food supplies and food stores that are also important to supplement your cooking. You might want to consider vitamins. One good thing about vitamins is they have a very long shelf life. And it's difficult in a preparedness survival situation to get a lot of balance in your meals and balance in your food supply. So those supplements, those vitamin supplements, are critical in my opinion. Now, one thing I want to talk about when it comes to foods like Mountain House foods, freeze-dried foods, things like that. In an emergency situation, don't eat those foods dry. Make darn sure that you've got water to mix into them. One of the problems in eating those dry, and I know it might seem like a good idea to some people. I've heard some people, I've seen some internet posts, people say, oh, I could just, you know, eat these freeze-dried foods without adding water to them. I think it's a bad idea. Like I said, it might seem like a good idea at the time, but you'll be sorry. What they're going to do is they're going to pull water out of your system once they're in your stomach. And you could end up pretty sick. You could end up dehydrated. It's just not a smart idea. All right? It's not too hard to get water. This is one of the reasons why storing plenty of water. I mean, you're going to have water for your freeze-dried foods and so forth, and sometimes MREs. So, you know, let's face it. Store the water. Do the right thing. Cook them the correct way, follow the instructions to the detail that are on the package. Now, I want to make a comment here that I'm actually doing this podcast. I just thought of this. I'm actually doing this podcast a little bit differently than normal. I don't have my typical headset. So right now I'm just basically speaking to my recorder. So if the sound quality sounds a little different, it's because, number one, I'm not driving. I'm sitting in a nice air-conditioned hotel room here. It's been hotter than blazes here in Texas. It's ridiculous. 103, 104 degrees. Al Gore's not correct about global warming, but boy, this sure feels a little bit like global warming. If some of you are listening from the Texas or the general area here, you'll know what I'm talking about. But this nice air-conditioned hotel room that I'm sitting in right now while I'm on a business trip is really, it's really cool. Even though my vehicle is air conditioned, you know, I've got to get in and out of it so much to make my business calls that it just gets hot. So anyway, that's why the sound quality is a little bit different. All right, let's get back to things that you can eat and how to cook them. The next thing I'm going to cover might sound a little gross, but it's the truth. Insects and worms can actually be pretty good for your diet. They're high in protein, And, you know, again, a preferred method is to boil them. And, you know, they could hold you over for a long time and give you some nutrients. And if that's all there is, that's all there is. One thing you might want to consider is to take them out of the water once they're boiled. Take them out of the water once the water has cooled, and then crush them into a powder. You can add that powder to your stews or soups if you've got stews and soups, if you have those supplies with you. Now, a lot of people they have a real aversion, and I'm one of them, folks. You know, when I see these people just pick up an insect and swallow it whole, that's not me, all right? But if there's insects and worms available, you know, adding them to stews or soups, to me, sounds like that's a pretty good idea. And to this date, I have not been in that situation, but that's probably what I'm going to do to make them taste a little bit better. You know, also, think about kids here as well. Good luck trying to get a kid, most kids anyway, to pick up a worm or an insect and eat it. Now, some kids may think that that's cool. When I was a kid, I didn't think that was cool. Some may go, hey, yeah, this is cool, watch this, but very few. So the powdering method of eating those insects and worms might make it a little bit more pleasant to eat them, and you might want to consider that. Now, Gary Benton, the author of this article over at simplesurvival.net, I really like what he has to say about fish and shellfish as well in this article. It's good stuff here. And you need to read the whole thing in its entirety. I'm just kind of glancing over some of the salient points of it. But I love fish and shellfish. And, you know, if you're near the ocean and something happens, you're near a source of water that's got fish and shellfish in it, they're excellent food sources. And it's very, very nutritious and high in protein. One of the things you can do with these fish and the shellfish is wrap them in broad leaves and place them directly on hot coals. Or you can wrap them in leaves, cover the leaves with mud, and then cook them until the mud dries. When the mud is hardened, you just take your food off the fire, break the mud shell, and then open up the leaves. Now, be real careful. Don't get pieces of mud on your food. You know, and fish can be placed on a spit and placed over a bed of hot coals as well. But remember, when you cook shellfish, they need to be cooked for quite a while. You know, Gary says in his article, 10 minutes, I like to cook them longer than that. If I'm in a survival situation, the last thing I want to do is get sick. You know, sickness, especially food sickness or food poisoning, it's probably one of the worst things that can happen. You know, there's already been a disaster. You're in this situation in the first place because some kind of a disaster happens. The last thing you want to do is make the disaster worse by getting sick. I like to boil for a good 15 to 17 minutes to make them safe to eat, especially shellfish and food sources like that. Now, let me get into some food preservation. Because let's talk about before the disaster, preserving meats. One of the best, easiest, least expensive ways to preserve meat is to smoke it. And I've got a smoker, and I haven't used it in a while. I need to start using it again. You know, once this move is completed, then I think I'll start doing some more smoking of meat. Now, some people say, well, why don't you just jerk meat? You can do that. Jerky is the term used to describe a certain type of meat preparation, and it's fairly easy to do. Just remember to keep it dry and wrapped up to keep it clean. You might want to crumble up a couple pieces of jerky and add it to soups as well. That kind of enhances the flavor. I've done that. You know, beef jerky, add it to soups or stews. Man, that's good stuff. You know, and when jerky is added to other soup contents, it makes it so much easier to eat. Now, you want to make a good camping soup? Take a handful of rice and add some beef jerky to the water. So add rice and beef jerky into the water when you're making soup, and you'd be surprised. It tastes pretty good. Okay, sorry, I had to grab a phone call there. All right, I want to kind of wrap up this show. It's going to be a little bit shorter show than normal. Typically, my shows are a little bit longer than this, but this is kind of an add-on, like I said, to episode 146. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about some cooking methods as well that I didn't cover in episode 146. Have you ever thought about box oven cooking? In a disaster, box oven cooking can be pretty neat, can be pretty easy, and pretty efficient. Think about this. What are you going to do if you lose power? And you know it's not going to be back on for days, weeks, maybe even a month. Okay? What if you had to leave your home and live in a nearby campground? How would you cook for you and your family? You may want to think about building a box oven and using the box oven method. Now, to build a box oven, all you need is 3 pie tins, some briquettes, a stapler, some tape, glue, a wire coat hanger, aluminum foil, and a cardboard box. Okay, even if you don't have any power, you can gather and produce those things, can't you? Step 1. What you do is you cut up the coat hangers to make a rack. Step 2, take the lid off the box and turn the box on its side. Next, wrap foil on the inside of the box and the box cover. After that, secure the foil with the staples or the glue that you have. Now, it's real important that you don't leave any of the cardboard exposed. If you do, patch that up. If you tear the aluminum foil, patch it up. Even a little pinhole, a small little tiny little hole in the foil could ignite the box. So you got to make sure that you don't have any exposed cardboard at all. Place a pie tin upside down in the bottom of the oven and take about 8 to 10 briquettes and kind of strategically place them on the second pie plate tin. Place that on top of the inverted pie tin that's on the bottom of the box. Then place the food into a third pie tin and place it on the rack that you built with the coat hangers that you cut up. All right, and those 8 briquettes, those 8 charcoal briquettes, could produce probably about 360 degrees of heat. Now, you can control the heat by either adding charcoal briquettes or removing them, but be careful with that, or opening the door to release the heat. Okay, so think about that. It's kind of hard to explain on an audio podcast. It's easier if you see it. I'll try to find some YouTube videos and maybe post some links to some YouTube videos on making your own box oven. But it's all about getting creative. And it's all about thinking how to cook and different methods of cook, because let's face it, obviously what you know is probably not going to be available if some kind of a disaster strikes. It all takes practice. It all takes practice, perseverance, and ingenuity. Okay, so I said this was going to be a short show, but I wanted to add it. So like I said, even though I'm calling it episode 148, consider that it's an add-on to episode 146. Hopefully that satisfies a few of my critics that said I didn't get detailed enough. You know, I love the iTunes reviews that you folks post, and you know, I like the comments that you guys send me either by email or you go to the website todayssurvival.com. and send me comments. I'm an open-minded guy, and I'm always looking for ways to improve this show. I do want to put out a little bit of a rebuttal to some of the critics lately about some of my shows. This is episode number 148, and I want you guys to think about something. First of all, keep the comments coming. I don't want you to like every show that I do. I don't want you to agree with everything I say. You know, it's not healthy to agree with everything somebody says or to like everything that somebody does. So I'm okay. I'm a big boy. I can handle the criticism. It seems that some of the comments that have been posted lately, it seems like the person posting them probably listened to one show, maybe 2 shows. I'd like to request that you listen to several shows. Listen to a dozen of my podcasts, and then give me some constructive feedback. Some of the comments on there about that my show lacks content or that it lacks usable information, maybe you caught me on a bad day. Maybe the show didn't relate to you. Whatever. I've done 148 podcasts, folks. If you listen to half of them, then write me a comment and tell me if you've got some usable information. I think if you listen to half of these nearly 150 shows that I've put out, I think you're going to walk away with a lot of usable information. A whole lot. I try to put some thought into this. I try to put some research into this. Sometimes it's my own personal experience. Sometimes my personal opinion comes out. Can't help that. It's my show. I want to just say this. Give it a shot sometime. Try to record a podcast. Try to, maybe not even a podcast, but just try to record some of your thoughts in an audio format. Try that. Just try talking to your computer or talking to an MP3 recorder, for example. It's not as easy as you might think. It's definitely not as easy as you might think. So put yourself in my shoes for a minute. I do this. This is a labor of love, folks. It's not my profession. This is a hobby of mine. I learn just as much doing this podcast as the people who listen to it. Obviously, some of you who have commented recently said that you haven't been learning a lot. But to those of you who've put some comments on iTunes lately, did you listen to more than one show? Did you listen to even a half a dozen shows? Even if you listen to six of my podcasts, I think you may find something. Now, if you listen to 20 or 30 of my podcasts and say, hey, Bob, look, I've listened to episodes number X through Y, and you're not giving me anything of value, pal, so I'm going to turn you off. Okay, I understand that. But I understand the comments, and I understand where some of you are coming from. Just do me the favor of listening to several podcasts on several different topics, and then let me know what you think, okay? So store what you eat, eat what you store. Hopefully I've been able to give you some more ideas on how to cook them, different ways to cook things, different ways to cook strange foods and make them taste fairly decent. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and sign off. I'm Bob Main, and you've just listened to another episode, episode 148 to be exact, of today's survival show, where I just talk about doing what you can with what you have, wherever you are, and keep it rooted in common sense. Thanks for tuning in, folks. I'll catch you next time. Goodbye.